So Nick Savvides, welcome to the show. Filmmaker, film and video producer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Tell me a little bit more about who you are, what you do, what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show, Glenn. I appreciate it. So I do a couple things. I work for Canon. I do support on the Cinema EOS line and Canon Professional Services. And I also do some freelance video things, whether shooting camera or editing. I've had experience on both sides. So one of the fun things I got to shoot recently was Voodoo Fest. That
Okay.
was fun. That was didn't happen past 2020. It got canceled this year as well, of course. But got to shoot it in 2019. I also work for a production company in town editing one of their shows. So, I've done different side of things.
And we missed Voodoo Fest. But that's all my buddy ever talks about is Voodoo Fest.
It is pretty wild because it's right before Halloween traditionally. So you have people that dress up in costumes. Some of them are clever and inventive. Some of them are a little maybe risque. But it's an interesting mix, and they do pick some notable bands as well.
Yeah, Voodoo Fest. Yeah, we were there, right before Halloween. So I guess we kind of missed all the big hoopla for Halloween. What's all the other holidays around Halloween that they celebrate in Louisiana? Bastille Day. That's not near Halloween, is it?
I'm not
Or
sure.
is that even a New Orleans thing, Bastille Day?
Well, I guess they do a little bit because there is a notable French
That's
remnant
right. Oh, yeah.
even now. So I'm not the expert on that. I want to say that is maybe July-ish
Oh,
or in
okay.
the summer at some point.
No, we were there for about 5 days. And since I was tied up with one gig, they were tied up with like another gig. And but we just did our best to go out, kind of like, we saw the parade weddings, and I think we didn't see a funeral, but we saw the big marching band following a wedding and some of that stuff. And it was pretty fun out there in New Orleans. But going back to you mentioned Voodoo Fest was canceled. How have you been impacted for, over the last year, year and a half? Any gigs now?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, right? So, for the production company I was working for, we were fortunate in that they were considered essential services because they were also making a TV show for schools, sort of educational content. And as a result, they were able to stay open. So, that show was able to continue. Now, it didn't happen this year, I suspect in part because of COVID pressures. I mean, look, it's been tough. Louisiana, two of the big industries, tourism and oil and gas, right? So tourism takes a big hit with COVID. A lot of the festivals are not happening. New Orleans, place where festivals happen pretty much every week, was closing down most of them. I mean, even Jazz Fest, I was looking forward to going to Jazz Fest. They were doing it, delaying it from when it normally happens. They were going to do like, okay, we've been gone for a while. We're bringing it back 2021. And they made the decision to cancel it. So you have those kind of things. And then I would sometimes get gigs on related events, right? So it is a factor in that regard. I do think it's going to be, oh man, I think the industry is going to move to this thing where if they continue the COVID standards that they have, it's going to be either like the massive productions or the really, really small ones, right? Because I've heard that some of these productions, their budgets are spending, you know, 20 to 30% of it on COVID testing.
All the COVID precautions, yeah.
Right? So if you're Jurassic World, you can afford that. If you're a scrappy guy, a little indie team trying to make things work with whatever you can, 20 to 30% extra on your production becomes untenable, or it becomes something where, well, this would have been viable for the business that you're working for or whoever it is. That additional cost is going to be overwhelming. So then it's like, okay, well, what can we do with smaller teams, which is what I've been thinking of and focused on these days. The shoots I'm doing now are like, what can I do with one or two people, let's say. So let's hope that the standards for COVID testing get alleviated, because otherwise, if they continue, which I fear that they might, in spite of the vaccine, I think they're going to become entrenched. And if that's the case, that's going to make certain projects untenable for more people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I find like a lot of filmmakers are experimenting, and I've had a number of guests on the show. We've talked about the film Host, which was a horror movie done through Zoom. It was like it took place during the quarantine, and these four or five folks were doing a Zoom happy hour, and then they wanted to do a séance, but through Zoom, and then this demon started attacking all of them. throughout the planet.
A demon attacks during a Zoom session. It's like not that far removed from reality, right? I mean,
people
what hellish forces brought about this? Like, yeah. This is how I interact with people. I can't see them in person. I'm locked down. Everything I try to do is restricted. And there's evil forces at work in this session. Like, okay.
I mean,
right?
You know, it's not based on a true story. It's inspired by actual events, maybe. Right, exactly. You know, it's inspired by actual events because there was like an evil force, you know, like ruining our lives, and they just it kind of tweaked facts a little bit, and they made it this demon, right? But I mean, it's like these filmmakers were kind of working outside the box and like, hey, listen, you know, we can make a film. We'll have fun with it. And even before COVID, there was I think his name is Jonathan Cho from Harold and Kumar. He was Harold in Harold and Kumar, but he did a movie called Searching, where it's all screen records of him trying to find his.
Oh, I think I may have seen that one. That one was an interesting way to do like a confined thriller.
25, probably. I mean, come on, we could pull that off at like $20,000.
Yeah,
you know, and it's super confined.
And it was compelling enough. It was. Mm-hmm. They had some good performances that made it interesting.
Absolutely.
Although I think there's only room for so many of those, right? Like, it's not the kind of thing that I want to see dozens of them, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm glad I saw that one, but especially with Zoom becoming the norm, I mean, I think at a certain point, there's going to be a longing to return back to things, grandeur, right? I mean, even in like the 30s, right, the Great Depression, things were pretty tough, and Hollywood was doing these big spectacles, kind of escapist, giving you the big vision, because I don't know that people want to be reminded, even when they're trying to relax, of you know, less than ideal situations all the time, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's why everybody's just so anxious for, you know, for example, everybody was so anxious for Black Widow to come out, because it was just a reminder of the big MCU extravaganza films. Everybody was so anxious for the MCU shows, WandaVision, Loki, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you know, these epic MCU properties. And it's not Contagion. I wish I could remember the name of this movie where women, this post-apocalyptic movie where this black ash came mysteriously out of the sky, and then the women were dying off, and it was a Netflix original. And I wish I can't remember the name.
I wish I could help you out. I'm trying to stay up to date, but there's so much coming out.
So much content. I'm finally getting around to watching Clickbait. Everybody was like screaming about Clickbait 2 weeks ago, and everyone's talking about Manifest now because Netflix just picked it up, and it's probably
that one I am curious about. I haven't ventured in, but people have compared it to Lost, which I'm curious.
So
that will get my attention.
Yeah. So did you watch Lost from beginning to end?
I did. It's funny you mention that. I actually got to meet.
Sorry about that.
No. It has. Does Lost have that kind of reaction for you, where you have to get up and like, okay, hold on, whoa.
Let me just like you know, catch my breath.
Yeah.
Breathe in, breathe out, and then just, you know, completely. The show was just so good and like drew me in, and then it was just the biggest pile of crap for the last.
Oh, I disagree. I really like the ending. I'm one of the few. Well, no, so I met people who really like it, and I met people who really don't like it, and so I think that's interesting when a show has that kind of reaction.
That's folks. True. That's a good point. Yeah.
They didn't play it safe. I feel like some of the people who didn't like the ending misunderstood it. I'm not saying you did, but some of the things where people have taken issue with it, where they say it was all a dream, or and the showrunners have specifically said that it was not. So anyway, interesting show. I actually got to meet Carlton Cuse, one of the showrunners on Lost. That was a very strange Lost-like experience for me. There were a lot of unexplainable moments of serendipity or coincidences that I can't quite explain that happened. It was so disorienting to me for a while afterwards that I ended up making a video on it on YouTube. It's like a 2-hour it's like a 2-hour video plus, where it was the only way I could concisely explain it. So and to give you some sense, I'm not normally someone who does 2-hour videos. That may have been the longest video I made, although I do like long form content. I think with YouTube, you have things, you know, YouTube and Spotify, people like Joe Rogan have gotten us used to the long form conversation, right? So it just felt like, okay, this is not exactly a film. It was made for YouTube, but it was a chance to try to make sense of things. And some people found it interesting. So yeah, I guess I do have a, it's still a show that means a lot to me at this point. I've gone through and watched it all the way, not just once, but twice.
You watched all of Lost. You watched through Lost twice.
Yes. So the first time was watching it as it came out. I eventually got caught up, and then I had the chance to meet with Carlton Cuse. And so it was like, well, you know, since I'm meeting with him, I might as well go back and rewatch it. And I mean, it's really well done, the storytelling, I think, even episode by episode. So I do some writing things. My background is, it started initially on the writing side. I co-host a screenwriting group here in Baton Rouge. So it's useful, I think, just to go through it and study it on, like, what are they doing episode by episode and then season by season. And then you pick up things that at least I missed initially. So I think even in season one, there are hints of where the show is going in later seasons, hints of character arcs, let's say, or the bigger mystery. So on a craftsmanship perspective, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like you said, the writing was great. And so to what little behind the scenes I know about it, from what I understand, J.J. Abrams wanted to end it on season 3, and it was such a hit that the studio, you know, forced it to go to a 6 seasons.
Okay. AJ had stepped away. I could be wrong, but it was Damon Lindelof and then Carlton Cuse. Those were the guys that were running it. And then it was at the time a fairly unprecedented thing where they said, we've got this very successful show and we want to end it on our terms. We don't want to keep running it. And so there may have been some back and forth between the studio and the creative team, but they did say, look, we want to end it after so many seasons. We don't want to keep it going indefinitely because we are going to run out of story. And that was something that they were pushing for. So, you know, I understand that it's polarizing. I still think it's one of the best TV shows ever made. I will go on a limb and say that. I would easily put it up with other TV shows that I admire. It pretty broad in its scope and in the references that they were using and the character arcs. Yeah. And I'm not someone who feels like I understand everything. I'm sure there are things that I still missed. I was the guy that got the lost book, right? Where they give you the behind the scenes of some things. I got it for my birthday. Can't remember if I asked for it or if a family member just knew me well enough to get it for me. But that you read it and then it's giving you all the little references, you know, like, oh, you know, this was a reference to Wizard of Oz. Did you catch this? Like, oh, huh. So a lot of little details like that. And the fact that they were able to incorporate so many cultures, so many different kinds of characters, and to give it this sweeping mythological story that is in some ways familiar, but in some ways something new, you know, like let's say remnants of The Tempest and other Shakespeare stories and so on, the kinds of characters that you're seeing, right? You don't have that same scope on something like Mad Men, which I think is also done well. That one's very specific. It's like we're doing a very specific time period and we're going to do it really well. We're going to get the details right on the clothing and the advertising and the cultural influences and see, you know, you get some sense of the country at a pivotal time, but through this very focused lens. And with Lost, it's a little broader, big picture, global outlook. And that takes some effort. I think that's worth taking into account when discussing shows that are that have that broad appeal. And and again, the fact that even now there are people who are so polarized, or there are people like me who passionately defend the ending, and then you maybe rant about it, about why it's terrible. Even now, I mean,
yeah,
it says something about the kind of emotion that the show evoked.
So, you know, me, as a film man, want to do in, want to see in filmmaking, and then want to do because of what I want to see in filmmaking. And, you know, I'll compare Lost to Inception. You know, okay. What I mean, like Lost put us through this whole journey, and I think the journey should not have been that long, and I think they should have been more prepared for the ending, and had a more not a and don't have this polarizing ending. So Inception, right?
Had a polarizing ending or controversial ending. I mean, people fight about that as well.
Fight about that ending, And so here's my thing, kind of like as a movie fan, as a filmmaker, as a fan of joyrides, you know, amusement parks, you know, you put us through such a ride for 2 hours. The van was floating in the air for 30 minutes. I mean, the climax for the film's climax, well, I think was 35 to 40 minutes. The van was floating in the air for 30 minutes. You see what I'm saying? And then they're inside and then they're inside and then they're pulling back out and they're pulling them back out. You could give us a clear closed ending. Show that top drop and end it and give us that happy ending. You put us through so much. And
you also don't like Inception. You're also frustrated at that film.
Love that film. Love everything about that film, except for that one moment. It's as a storyteller, we're taking on this journey. We're taking on this ride. You know, and the dream within the dream and the fights within the fights and all that stuff. And we finally come to like the last 30 seconds. Me, this is just me personally. I would have loved to just see that top drop.
Yeah, I hear you. There are, I guess there are two kinds of stories, right? There's one that gives you ultimate resolution. Right. Like, say, Star Wars. I think Star Wars has a pretty clear resolution of what happens. You see it. The Death Star blows up. They live happily ever after. And then if we're going to Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks celebrate. Harmony has returned. Right. Pretty clear resolution on that. And then there are others that are more open ended, like Inception. Or Lost, perhaps, that reward multiple viewings.
Yeah.
I think Christopher Nolan is fascinating because he's the kind of guy that includes little details, even a few frames long, that can change the meaning of things. And I think there's a lot of things going on in Inception that go beyond the initial viewing. It's true also for Memento, for Tenet. I was obsessed with it. I've watched that one a couple of times. There are little details. I feel like I've gotten a better sense of that with some of the online discussion, but there are still little details that I'm puzzled about. And I suspect that it is because I don't fully grasp everything that's happening.
Listen, Tenet, you know, I watched Tenet. Tenet's probably the best film of the year, best film. And still, Nolan stands out as one of the best filmmakers of our generation. And but the beauty with Tenet is there was closure. There was a beginning. There was a beginning, a middle, and an end. Sort of, you know, when it comes to kind of like the...
There are still things that you don't initially know, like who is the kid at the end?
Sure.
What's the significance of the Tenet Square? Have you seen that online?
No.
So there's a passing reference to it about them going to Pompeii. And this is something based on an actual thing, not like outside of the movie, but it's something they found in Pompeii in, let's say, the Middle Ages. And it's a palindrome on all the words that are in the square. So it's tenet, arepo, opera, satyr. And those are all things that are like specifically mentioned in the movie, not like close variations. It's like, no, they all have moments in the movie. And, you know, that square, they make a reference to Pompeii in passing, but it was only through some of the, let's say, online film enthusiast community trying to break it down. Like, what does this mean? Did you catch that formula that's on the back of that shot? You know, here's what that is. Here's that formula. And it's like forward and back entropy and pretty complex physics that goes beyond my level of science knowledge, right? And so it's interesting that these storytellers like Christopher Nolan and I would say the team on Lost, they can tell that kind of storytelling in... acknowledgement of the way that people experience stories now, right? Because now we have the internet, we have communities, we have experts who say, like, okay, you don't know what that formula is. I'm actually a physics specialist, and I can tell you what it means, and here's how it ties in, and then someone riffs on that. So it's something that I don't think was possible in earlier days, when it was just like, oh, you see a movie once on the big screen, and then it's years before you get it on VHS, perhaps, if you get it, and then you forgot what, you can go and see it, and then catch up. I mean, I did this most recently with The Green Knight, which I also really liked. And there were things in there like, oh, what's this symbol? I knew some, I do appreciate Arthurian mythology and folklore. So I had some background going in, but there were still some things that I missed in that. And then there are a couple of videos I found on YouTube where they break it down, like, at least here's what it is in the tradition of it. And this character you see, this fox, one of the characters, like, oh, this is what the fox would symbolize in Celtic mythology. Like, oh, that's pretty neat. And this star, the 5 points of honor for the knight, and so on. So I think it's neat that filmmakers can tell those stories where even little details, even a few seconds or less than a second of something, it's on there, and someone says, whoa, what was that? That little formula, what was that about? I think it's pretty neat that some stories can encourage a deep dive like that.
So, you know, and you touch upon a good point, because there have been, I have had my moments, you know, as stubborn as I am, and as resolution wanting, you know, I want resolution a lot of times in films, you know, finding the clues to lead you on maybe an outside path, because you're right, with social media, a lot of filmmakers are kind of playing, films have always kind of played within the realm of that universe, you know, musicals, you know, at the time, and then there were war films during wartime, and then there was, you know, revolutionary films during time of revolution and civil rights, and you know, 80s was, you know, we were craving something new and futuristic in the 80s, and that's what we got. We got Predators and Terminators and so on and so forth. And now filmmakers are understanding that they might have fans investigate their films. But, you know, touching upon The Man in the High Castle is a series on Prime. Are you familiar with it?
I actually watched it. I was
from beginning to. So have
you? That was one. Yeah, I did invest enough to make it through.
Well, I have not made it through yet. But what I noticed was the one character who was a Nazi spy, he went back to Berlin. I think it was when he went back to Berlin, and he got off the train, and the train said 5150. The train number was 5150. And that kind of clued me in, and I said, wait a minute, I know that number from something. And as it turned out, 5150 was an album by Van Halen. But 5150 is a state code for someone who suffers from mental illness, which is now he's riding this train. So I started Googling that, and I'm like, holy shit, I knew that number from somewhere, 5150. Maybe it was a liquor or something, I don't know. But 5150 is the state, is a US code for someone who suffers from mental illness, which is now like, okay, is that a clue to what's happening with all the different kind of subplots of what's going on in Man in the High Castle and stuff like that. So I don't know yet. I didn't finish it, and I know you did. So I don't want to be spoiled, and maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I don't know that show as far as some of the details. I imagine they do have little Easter eggs and things to go down the rabbit hole on. Right. I didn't do that on that show. I was a little disappointed by the last season. It felt like that may have been an instance where they were trying to tell a bigger story and Amazon said, well, okay, wrap it up here, fella.
Yeah, time to cut it.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't investigated it. I thought it was an interesting setup. That alternate history is intriguing. And I thought the first couple of seasons lived up to that potential of what it could be. And then that one, I mean, in the way that you seem to feel disappointed by Lost, I feel like I was disappointed, not to the point that I was angry about it, just that I didn't feel that all of the things that they were setting up paid off in a fulfilling way. And it's really hard to do that, I would say, where you tell a compelling story for weeks and weeks, and then months and years, and then you hold all those threads with all the people that you have as your actors and your production team, and then you have a grand payoff at the end. I mean, even doing that in when you're just writing is very hard, right? I think one of the great series in my mind that ends on a really strong note is the Harry Potter series. And I've gone through it again. I've gone through it a couple times just to see how it's set up and the payoffs that come. And they're paying off and circling back to things from the first book. And there are questions that you have midway through that then get resolved later on in a very affirming way. That is one that I feel like has ultimate closure, right? I mean, there, it's pretty clear. It's not like, well, does Lord Voldemort, well, you know, I mean, if you haven't had a chance to see it, folks, or read it, it's been out for a while. But I mean, you're not left with a lot of uncertainties about the fate of Lord Voldemort. There's always a chance that, well, they'll find a thing like Terminator 2, like, oh, actually, there was a robot that went back. There's a Horcrux that got sent back in time. And I haven't seen the play, so perhaps they do that. I don't know. But all that to say, I think it's very difficult to just make even one episode of something that's compelling, and then you do it for seasons, and then to try to pay that off in a satisfying way is a difficult task.
Yeah, I mean, it is a difficult task. I'm not going to take away from, you know, the hard work that goes in to running a show and producing and writing and the actors, the time spent that these actors have. I mean, look at Walking Dead and just how long that's been going on. And I'm excited to see how that comes to a conclusion. But I mean,
are you still following Walking Dead? Are you on every episode?
No, I think I left off at the point where we realized who the Whisperers were, Alpha and Bravo. Beta, the Alpha and the Beta were within the Whisperers. I think that was like the beginning of season 9, maybe. I don't know. It was a while ago.
That's, so. You know, hats off for sticking with it that long. I try to stay with it. I gave it like 2 or 3 episodes or seasons, I should say. And it was interesting. It's just like at a certain point, I felt like I had a sense of what was going on.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, this is this part of this season and this is that part. And okay. And at the end of the day, a show has to do quite a lot to keep me going for every episode. And I'm not saying it's a bad show. It's well made and lots to appreciate about it. But if I'm going to make that commitment, there's got to be some bigger resonance in an ongoing way, you know?
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, coming back to, you know, what we've been working on, have you been back on set? Have you been back on the field or back on a location shoot, or have you been back out there shooting something, producing something?
Yeah. So recently I've been doing a couple of videos, more pared down, as I was saying before, but Canon sent me some equipment to test. It's something that they do from time to time when it becomes available. And it helps us get a better sense of what the equipment can do. So I was like, oh, wow, this is nice gear, a little nicer than I normally have, at least without renting gear, right? So they sent me the Canon 1DX Mark II and the C500 and one or two other items. And so it was a chance to go and reach out to some people and like, hey, I was thinking about doing some video tests. And I don't know if you can hear that. It seems like
a little bit. It's all right.
Well, if it continues, I'll go and see what can be done. I'm maybe my roommate.
Hey, no sweat, but back to the canon.
Yeah. So, right. So they sent me some gear to test, and I reached out to some places around town that I like, or some friends, and doing a couple of projects. I'm not the guy. I mean, I think testing camera gear is important, but I can only do so much of it in the basement shooting focus charts and whatnot. After a while, that gets kind of boring to me. So it's like, okay, let's test it in real world conditions. So I did one right now. I posted on YouTube. So one is a coffee promo video done in a kind of Daniel Schiffer kind of style, let's say. He's one of the guys that I really like on YouTube as far as the way he shoots food and so on. So, you know, we did one of those, and then I did a kind of sort of behind the scenes video on that. I have a few others that I'm working to release. Those have been shot and in the midst of editing them. So, yeah, you know, trying to get some projects where I'm, excuse me. So trying to get some projects going with things. I mean, as I mentioned before, the TV show that I was editing before, it didn't happen this season, in part because of COVID pressures, I imagine, in part because of the industry also hurting in town because of oil and gas taking a hit. So like, okay, you know, some of the things that I had normal gigs on, I would have probably been booked to shoot Voodoo Fest and some other things. So because those things have gone away, I want to still shoot things. And sometimes it's a paid project, and I'm reaching out to businesses to try to set those up. And then other times it's just like, okay, well, I've got some gear to test, and we might as well make a video that we like and can have fun with, as opposed to just sitting around and again testing in the basement, right? So yeah, I'm trying to do a couple of things where it's a good challenge, whether or not it's a paid gig. And I'm grateful that I am in a position where I can be selective. I can say, okay, I want to do this because it's a good challenge, or I can make some money on this, but it's not like I've got to get, you know, 5 or 10 gigs. Because that would be really tough. You know, like I also shoot weddings. I had weddings that were canceled, of course. I mean, not a lot of people were doing live weddings in 2020. And so, you know, that's disappointing, but you do what you can. I was grateful. I shot a convention for this group, Louisiana Surveyors. They have an organization. So I shot their convention this year. Last year, it was virtual only, but we were able to do it in isolation. This year, they actually got a nicer area, Jimmy Buffett Resort, actually in Shreveport. So that was kind of fun. I hadn't been there before, and so we had a little bit of time to walk around and explore. And it's the kind of place where, like, you walk around every few corners, and there's a Jimmy Buffett photo, and it's almost like you expect, like, you round the corner, and then you're almost gonna see, like, Jimmy Buffett, you know, leaning back in a chair, playing Cheeseburger in Paradise or something. You know, it has that kind of vibe. So, you know, there's still things going on. There's still opportunities to be had. It's just that people are more cautious and more sparse in what they're doing these days. And I think there's also that uncertainty, right? Like, businesses are saying, well, can we afford this? Are we going to get shut down again when you got Delta variant, the Omicron variant that's going to be coming, you know, whatever it is, Alpha, Zeta variant, you know? Yeah. It's like Greek fraternities here in the variant of COVID.
The Darwin Initiative variant.
Yes, right. way to bring it back to us.
Yeah.
But there does seem to be some uncertainty. Like, can we afford to do advertising? Can we afford to do a new spot when we don't know if some new regulation is going to shut us all down? And there are some people like me who want to get back to normal living. And then there are others who unfortunately are in a position where they like the lockdowns. They like the control that they have on people. And that to me is a little disheartening.
Yeah. No, I get that. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, there was during the quarantine, I jumped on live streaming, a lot of remote gigs. And then as we got more towards hybrid stuff, you know, there were a couple opportunities for me to go back out, be in front of the camera, be behind the camera on a couple of projects, and definitely took advantage of those. I got fully vaccinated as soon as I possibly could. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back on set and getting back into the, you know, the swing of things as we used to know it. And I mean, also, you know, looking forward to seeing what new ideas people are having and what kind of hybrid ideas, you know, the new normal, you know, kind of splicing confined stuff, cheap technology, you know, big budget, massive stuff, or the hybrid stuff, whatever people are doing these days. And so I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of what it's coming, should be coming down the pike, 2022 and beyond. You know, it's going to be interesting. Yeah. It's going to be interesting what people come up with when they start thinking outside the box. Necessity is the mother of invention. You know.
Yeah, we'll see. Here's hoping that it does encourage creativity and that we get back to normal.
Yeah. So I mean, we kind of touched upon it a little bit, but what's next on the agenda? What's the next set of plans, next set of goals for next 6 months to a year from now for Nick?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's always hard to say what the future holds, and there does seem to be a lot of uncertainty. The big projects for me right now, finishing up those videos that I shot with people and trying to do more. My focus these days is like, what can I do? As I said before, you know, like on the small scale, what can I do for businesses or bands or people in town? And then also the other big project, I would say my novel. I finished the novel. I've been revising it, and now it's a matter of going through and trying to figure out publishing options. So that's the other big challenge, I would say. That is a whole other thing. I feel like finishing a creative thing is one thing, and then there's the whole other side of, you know, what do you do with it? Promoting it, marketing it, getting it out to people. And that, I think, applies not just to books, but to films, music, whatever it is. And it's rethinking that thing, because you think, okay, well, you finish the thing. Okay, great. I wrote the book. I made the album. I made the film, whatever it is. And it's like, yes, that's one part of it. But the next uphill battle is getting it seen, finding the right home for it, whatever that is. And that seems to be like another full-time thing, and with its own challenges. And you know, just because someone writes a good book, I'm not saying I did, I don't know. I worked hard on it, but it may or may not be of value, hard to say. Some people have read it and liked it, but anyway, you know, just speaking broadly, an artist makes something, they can make an incredible album and it doesn't get heard. I mean, there are so many albums that are coming out each week on Spotify, and getting it heard, getting it discovered, it's a whole other task. And it's not necessarily like if you build it, they will come, right? Like they might if you find the right way to get it to the right people. And so I'm trying to allow enough time for that. Mm-hmm. it's nice for me to have several projects where it's like, okay, this is a bigger one and these are smaller ones, right? So the book has taken me, you know, a couple of years to write at this point. And for a time, it was something where I was putting in a couple hours each day. Now, not as much. Now I'm doing some of the video stuff a little bit more. But it's nice to have something where it's like, okay, the videos don't take as much time and I can put them out, get some reaction, see what people think, like, oh, okay, people like this, or, you know, that didn't connect, let's try something else. And then have a bigger one as well. And then I'm still reaching out to media contacts and saying like, hey, you know, what's your schedule looking like? You guys looking for help on this and this? And, you know, people do seem to be open to having those conversations. But again, there does seem to be some uncertainty in the media landscape. So people, from what I've seen, haven't been all that eager to massively expand their media projects and bring in even new freelancers at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I do get that. You know, recently I got a gig as an AD on a film, kind of outside the States. And it was because of connections, pre-existing, you know, a pre-existing network before COVID, and the fact I'm fully vaccinated. So I was able to get that gig and travel outside the States and do that for quite some time. And now it's a matter of going home and seeing what's next. But I mean, I think there's a lot of folks kind of experimenting, individuals, every individual is picking up an iPhone, picking up a GoPro, you know, hey, listen, you've got your opportunity with the Canon stuff and you're taking advantage of that gear and that time and just doing stuff, making projects happen. Whether it's paid or not, I think now is the opportunity. Still is the opportunity to just whip stuff up. I mean, a lot of folks are held up by just, it has to be perfect kind of mentality. And I think a lot of successful people are just, a lot of the successful people nowadays have took advantage of TikTok when the quarantine happened. They just took advantage.
Are you on TikTok?
I use TikTok the same way I use Instagram, is snippets from my YouTube stuff.
Okay.
Goes on. I'm on all the socials, but I'm not on TikTok dancing or anything like that. Okay.
I feel like I don't know. I may be like right past the age cutoff, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. And then the other thing is I'm a little wary because it's a Chinese company and I have some reservations about the data that they might, who knows? Maybe I should be on there, but it's worked well for you. You've gotten some good reactions on TikTok.
I guess. I mean, my social media skills and my social media marketing, my marketing skills are garbage. I don't know where I'm screwing up at, but you know, I just keep plugging away at it. And at some point, maybe, you know, something hits and then people start looking at the other stuff. I can't afford someone to do it for me. So,
yeah.
It's
good. You're experimenting with different platforms and
I'm trying. Yeah.
To see for me, I can only even somewhat engage a couple of them. Right. I'm not someone who's posting every day. I do get overwhelmed by social media. I mean, even going on Twitter, I'll go on Twitter, like, you know, every other day or so for a couple of minutes. And even that is overwhelming to me. I mean, it's almost like, even for like 5 minutes, I feel like I'm inhaling carbon monoxide. Cause it's just like, you know, I come close to despairing with some of the things. And I try not to follow really negative people, but nonetheless, it just seems like there's something on there that's discouraging, and just trying to press forward and take on creative challenges and do things that are you know, worthwhile, or I feel like, okay, this day I feel like I made some progress on my goals is challenging enough. And I feel like when I do too much social media, it is, I'm not reaching my goals or making as much positive progress. So I get that it's important. It seems like it's a handy tool to build an audience and so on and engage some people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like I've gotten a decent response from people on say YouTube, and that's been helpful, and Facebook too, to some extent. But again, for me, if I were to go even more on these different platforms and try to be more involved on them, as some people say you should, like I think that would have a negative impact on me personally, and probably even on my creative output.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, because you know you might get sucked into trying to follow a certain trend, and as opposed to just, you know, following your own vision and doing what you want to do. And I find that a lot. You know, I've had colleagues tell me, you know, send me examples of like, hey, here's what other people's doing, and I'm like, that's great, but they've already done it. Like, you can't be copying everybody. You kind of have to just come up with your own thing. Or if you're into doing something that some other people are doing, but you're into that and that's what you're good at and you like it, then just do that. Like, do what you want to do. And I think a lot of people get sucked into like trying to follow, you know, follow the,
chase the trend.
Hot topic. Yeah. Chase the trend, follow the hot topic of the week. And it's like, dude, I don't know anything about that. Like, why would I try to like stop and halt everything that I already have going on and try to catch up to stuff that, I mean, honestly, it's Greek to me, and I'm not even interested in it.
Yeah.
But what I'm doing with this and this and this is doing well. I like doing it. I'm having a good time with it, you know, and that's kind of like where that is, you know?
Yeah. And this is something I've been thinking about a bit recently. I think it's important for people trying to do creative work to protect their creative sensibilities to an extent, right? Because the reason that we get inspired to create, I think so many different reasons, but it's also very personal as well. And so there's a risk that in trying to get attention, trying to build a career, because it's a hard thing to do. Historically speaking, the vast majority of people who have attempted it haven't been able to do a sustainable career. And these are even from people who were really good, you know, Vincent van Gogh, only after the fact, right? Living in poverty for much of his life, or accomplished writers who were also doing gigs as insurance agent, right? So it's a very hard thing to do, just historically speaking. And then there's the pressure to say like, okay, well, if I did this and this, maybe I could get more traction. But then that's taking away from the spark that made it appealing in the first place, right?
Right.
So for me, it's like, would I want to be doing something where I'm, you know, maybe getting more success, but I'm doing things where it's like, oh man, I'm making schlocky stuff that I'm embarrassed about, but it's a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, I will say there are things where it's like, sometimes you take it and it's not going to be the optimum ideal thing. And it's like, but you know, it's paying the bills and I don't object to it. And it's like, it's creating something that has value. And even though it's not my ultimate creative representation of my ideal project, it's like, okay, I don't have issues with this. But there are some things where it's like, you know, if I did this, I would be so ashamed whenever I would see this video, you know? Just to give you one example that comes to mind. I mean, at one point, people reached out to me and they wanted to do the, like, you know, we buy cheap houses now kind of thing. And then it's right. Like, it's like, can you do the thing where it's like the dollars are falling, and you know, it's like, well, that's one approach. What about, and it was just, they wanted to just appeal to the lowest common denominator and like, you know, buy now or give us your house now and we buy it cheap. And like, I mean, I'm grateful that I was able to pay my bills. And there might be situations where someone's saying like, look, this is my only source of income. I've got to take it. You know, like I'm not trying to scoff at those people who do those jobs. I think that's something that each person has to decide case by case what's sensible for them. But I've been fortunate that I've been able to turn down things that I didn't think were a good fit, where it's like, okay, oh, you know, this style of music video that you want to do is like, cool, I don't think I'm the right person for that. You know, I'm probably not the guy to do the thugs in the club kind of video, right? So like, if that's what you want, I'm sure there are other people who can bring
you. And I look square as hell, you know, like kind of dressed like this with a hoodie and a baseball cap or a polo shirt and you know, cargo pants, you know, for all my gear. And I got my camera and then there's that music video. But I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of people out there like, why don't you make something good? And I'm like, dude, I'm living the best life I could live right now. I'm doing what I love and I'm getting paid well for it.
Yeah, there you go.
And on top of that, I'm always learning something new. I mentioned this before on the show, but you know, years ago, I jumped on the whole live streaming trend and going to conferences, going to seminars, going to concerts and a couple of robotic cameras, you know, linked to a computer and live streaming it to YouTube or live streaming it to their website or live streaming it to wherever. And, you know, learning, okay, the audio ins and outs, video signal in and out. And if I had not learned that whole live streaming thing and then and kind of implementing Zoom into it and audio and internet signal, audio signal, video signal, monitor setup and all that stuff, I wouldn't have started the podcast. But then had I not started the podcast, then people wouldn't have seen that. The people that I was on freelance rosters with doing the live streaming on location during quarantine, they said, dude, I saw your podcast and that's exactly what we're doing now during quarantine. We're doing everything remote using Zoom. We're doing everything remote, doing this, that, and the other thing. And then I just stayed relatively employed during the quarantine. A lot of folks didn't have anything going on and I stayed and I was busy. I had, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. You know, some weeks were only 2-3 days, but some weeks were 4 or 5 days of gigs throughout the entire quarantine. And I was able to work from home. And so and I'm still doing what I love because then there's these gigs and I'm still kind of perfecting the whole kind of podcast thing. Cause that's pretty much what that was, you know, doing these virtual conferences remotely. It's essentially a podcast for tax people or for you know, or for healthcare providers or insurance providers, you know, all these Microsoft or you know, whoever, you know, all these other clients that do these conferences. They used to do the conferences in the grand ballroom of the Marriott. And now it's just all done through Zoom. Everyone stays home and they're doing it through Zoom. And it's essentially just a podcast now, which taught me everything I needed to know to do this podcast. And, but going back to, you know, my point is, you know, an actor, like you said, a writer, his fallback would be, you know, an insurance salesman or something. You know, actors, their fallbacks are always, you know, waiting tables or bartending. You know, I knew some filmmakers whose, you know, full-time job, they were working at a bank. And if you have a fallback, you're going to end up falling back.
Yeah.
If you have a plan B, you're not going to take your plan A so seriously because you have a plan B. And Schwarzenegger always said, there can't be a plan B. There's only a plan A. You will make plan A happen. And so for me, there was always kind of a fallback. There was going to be, you know, whatever kept me on set, whatever kept me involved with film and TV and audio and video, I was going to jump on everything. So my schedule stayed jam-packed. But being full-time freelance and with a lot of the freelance rosters, they get it. You might have to drop a gig or two. And so I would have gigs lined up for next week. And then someone hits me up and says, hey, I want you to act. I want you to play a detective in this show. I would drop the not so I'm passionate about it gig for the thing that I'm more passionate about. And it might even be less money, but I would take the acting gig over, you know, a conference, a tax law conference, you know,
I mean, real quick. Those sound like who wouldn't be excited about tax law conference, right?
Sometimes I am, but
that's on my list of ideal opportunities. But no, going back to what we were saying before, to give a counterpoint, because you're right, there's something to be said about using whatever comes your way to learn and grow. I mean, if you look at some of the guys, Francis Ford Coppola, let's say, his early productions were not exactly great stuff. It was like schlocky stuff because he got an opportunity to do it. A number of filmmakers got their start working on Roger Corman exploitative kind of projects. So there is that thing where it's like, yeah, you might make it and it's like, okay, even if this is terrible and in questionable taste, there have been some people who have done that and then work towards more respectable things to their ultimate project. So yeah,
yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is James Cameron, I think, directed Piranha 2 or Piranha 3D.
I'm not familiar with those, so I can't say one or another, but possibly.
Yeah, he did one of those Piranha movies and they made a deal with them. He said, I'll do this movie, but you back Terminator. You know, and sometimes you have filmmakers, they're like, you know, this isn't going to be my masterpiece, but the next one. But, you know, you got to keep, you have to make something. Yeah. And I've mentioned this before on the show a number of times. Golden Globus, you know, Canon Films, they made Bloodsport, they made Invasion USA, they made Delta Force. You know, it was a pretty big name, all those B action movies from the 80s, you know, Canon Films, Golden Globus. And their motto was just make the film.
Just make it, get the money and run, right?
You know, if we didn't get all the money we wanted for this whole budget, but we're just going to make the film anyway. We'll find a way to complete the film. And some of the films are kind of bad. Some of the films are great. And they even got nominated, I think, for an Oscar when they eventually made Runaway Train with Eric Roberts, John Voight, Rebecca De Mornay. They took that Oscar win. They ran with it. But they just kept making more B movies because that was the next on the list. And they didn't – and it was –
It is nice when you're making B movies and you can say, like, from the Oscar nominated production company that brought you this film. Yeah.
And I think after Runaway Train, they went and made Over the Top and Cobra, both with Stallone. And then they made, a couple more Chuck Norris movies. Like, hey, listen, man, we're making movies, but just make the movie. Like, just do it. Let's just make it. You know, and I think that's, and James Cameron had to do the same thing with the, you know, one of the Piranha movies, and you know George Lucas struggled. He did American Graffiti, and you know that got him some notoriety, which got him greenlit for Star Wars. And even American Graffiti, I think, was a hit. You know.
Yeah, like, I mean, I like that film. I think it's done well. It was a pretty inventive in how they used soundtrack for that one, because you didn't have that kind of attitude where they spent a good bit of their budget on the soundtrack, and it's basically like wall-to-wall iconic music drops that they're putting in and tying it in, and so you didn't have that kind of dedicated soundtrack. We now take it for granted because it's like the norm now that you go to a movie and then the soundtrack has a lot of big hits on it to give it that familiarity, but American Graffiti was notable and one of the early films to do that extensive soundtrack in that way, and also a decent period piece. I think was going back to an earlier era, a little more innocent time.
Yeah. And you know, nowadays, like you were saying, nowadays, hell, the trailer, everything is designed with the marketing in mind, even the trailer. And they always have to have a cover. They always have to have like an instrumental. They always have to have like an a cappella cover song of a popular.
Yeah.
Of an older popular song. Like Black Widow, the opening scene had this Billie Eilish type of a cappella and maybe subtle instrumental version of Teen Spirit by Nirvana. I think ever since Johnny Cash remade Hurt by Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails, that was the marketing tool. And now it's like, okay, we need to do a cover song. We just have like, and if the original song is a male, then we'll have a female singing it. Or if the original singer of the song is a, they're going to reverse gender the singer and then have like very subtle, soft, almost ambient EDM instruments to it.
Yeah. And I think there are two reasons for that, maybe more, but one is on the right side, right? Like it costs more to get the famous song plus the famous recording. To have someone else, like a new up and coming talent, record it costs a little less. But then there's also something else that it might even help it to not have the original one, because then you have something that it feels familiar enough, but then it also feels new.
Original.
And that is something that is appealing to us as we go to check these things out, right? We want it, something it's like, okay, I'm going to go see a sci-fi film or a Western. I don't want to go thinking like, oh, this is like completely different. It's, you know, art exploitation in underwater core, like, I don't know, whatever it is, but it's something where you have some baseline, like, oh, I'm going to see a Star Wars film. I'm going to go see a Terminator film or a Pixar film, but this is going to be a new version of that. So in using a new voice for a familiar song, I think it can tap into that. And it works, at least for me. It's enough to get me to think like, oh, wait, that's that song. Oh, yeah. Oh, they got a new guy. Oh, okay. I'm curious. What is this thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's just about it. I mean, it's, you know, like something sparks in your mind. Oh, something's familiar about this. These lyrics and maybe the hook and maybe they're still kind of playing the notes, but they're playing it more subtle now and it kind of draws you in. It's softer, it's more subliminal. Yeah. But you know, kind of touching upon some of the earlier stuff you mentioned, what drives you? What is your driving force? What drives you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the mystery, right? I mean, I think a lot of us are still trying to figure it out. For me, I'm just getting to the point where I'm slowly understanding. And I think a big part of that for me is connection with people, right? For my creative projects where I feel a sense of connection and camaraderie, those are the most affirming ones. The ones where I try to do something and then things fall apart and I feel like, oh man, we did this thing and now there's this tension and we don't get along with some of the people.
Yeah.
Those are the projects where I think, why did I even bother? Right. And even some of my projects, I mean, I think at this point, I could probably look at most, if not all, of my projects and say, this project came about because of this relationship. Not necessarily like business wise, like it promoted this, although, you know, sometimes there's that. But also like, oh, this friend was a key influence, or this romantic interest, let's say, or a conversation I had with someone. It's like that little seed. And I might not even realize it at the time. It might be something that happened a few years back or trying to process something. But I think there's some kind of connection to someone or to a couple of people in most, if not all, my projects, right? So yeah, trying to preserve that through the creative process, trying to get to a point of more connection, I think is one of my underlying goals. And of course, finding success is encouraging. I mean, getting an income is a part of it. I'm not saying it isn't. I need to pay the bills just like everyone else, and camera gear is expensive and so on. But there are other things I could be doing to make money more quickly, perhaps. And, you know, sometimes I think maybe I should be doing those things, right? But when I do have those moments where there is that connection, it makes me think, okay, maybe I'll keep at it a little longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Nick, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Nick Savides, you know, Nick Savides, nsavides.com, nsavides pro on Twitter. Check out Nick's stuff, Nick's videos on YouTube. And Nick, it was a blast having you on. I can't thank you enough for coming on. Don't go anywhere. We're going to chat.